Good morning, and welcome to Crédito Real's third quarter 2020 earnings conference call. Crédito Real issued its quarterly report on Wednesday, October 28, 2020. If you did not receive a copy via email, please do not hesitate to contact us in Mexico City at +52 55 528 9753. It is important to note that the presentation and MP3 recordings referred to this call will be available at www.creo.mx. Before we begin the call today, I would like to remind you that the information discussed in today's call may include forward-looking statements and Crédito Real's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risk and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to rely undue on the forward-looking statements. The company undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements. With us this morning from Crédito Real, we have Mr. Andrew Romanos, Executive Chairman and CEO, and Mr. Carlos Ochoa, Deputy CEO. They will discuss on the more important strategic, financial, and operating aspects of the third quarter 2020. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Romanos.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. First and foremost, I hope to find you and your loved ones safe. Before I begin with the discussion of the quarter, I would like to express our deepest gratitude and recognition to all our associates who have worked tirelessly to keep our platform fully operational during these difficult times. Although the impact of the pandemic on the markets where we operate continued pressuring our results, the gradual economic reopening currently underway, primarily in Mexico, has helped us to regain traction, as it is visible in the reporting period results, the posted numbers last quarter that was heavily impacted by lockdown measures. In this regard, in the SME segment, we are about to conclude relief programs and most of the clients have already returned to pre-pandemic agreed scheduled payments. Furthermore, thanks to the enhancements performed at our digital platform and call centers, especially in payroll, we were able to achieve an outstanding collection and started first originations through the agreement with FAMSA this September. Here I would like to emphasize that this agreement with FAMSA will not imply any incremental risk on our standard operation, as Crédito Real has complete agency over credit analysis and approval, as well as full control on generated assets that are expected to reach about 3 billion pesos per year. Bear in mind that this alliance became operational as of quarter end, therefore its contribution to the P&L will be greatly reflected in the next quarter, when it gains further traction, thus helping us to offset the slowdown dynamics of the new normal towards our presence in the vibrant market of north of Mexico. At this point, before discussing our performance by segment, allow me to further elaborate on the last quarter's acquisition of an incremental stake in Crédito Real Arrendamiento. First, this development has no effects on the regular operation of business. It is fully incorporated in our structure since 2017. Second, the transaction was agreed since the inception of this venture 3 years ago with the option of acquire full ownership. And third and last, the 30 million Mexican pesos disbursement for a 26% incremental stake is not material for Crédito Real, as it is far outweighed by the incremental value contributed by this business that was delivering triple-digit growth rates with high margins of benefits just before the pandemic. Now, continuing with the analysis of the quarter, payroll loan origination improved sequentially, returning to levels close to that of the third quarter of 2019. Having solid support from our alternative channels. Similarly, the non-performing loan ratio of this business remains stable, as all Mexican government agencies have timely met their payment schedules. Loan origination in small and medium-sized enterprises decreased quarter on quarter, but delinquency and collection remain within expecting thresholds, thanks to the effectivity of relief programs. Expecting that collection of this business will be back to pre-COVID levels as most of relief programs end towards year end. Used Car Mexico moved forward in its recovery, fueled by a higher demand for affordable alternatives to public transportation, given the contagion risk that this later represents, while registered record levels in collection with a stable delinquency on the 2% mark. Turning to our international businesses, Used Cars USA origination was favored by the same dynamics of Mexico, thus significantly enhancing its performance versus the previous quarter, while its collection improved before the unemployment benefits granted by the federal government in that country. Following the same trend, despite the implementation of stricter origination policies that heavily prioritized asset qualities, SMEs USA loan origination posted over 100% sequential growth in origination, with stable collection metrics. On Central America, Instacredit portfolio performance was roughly in line with that of the previous quarter, as COVID-19 lockdown was lifted in Costa Rica until early September, while operations in Nicaragua continued evolving under similar dynamics that those presented at the beginning of the pandemic. Meanwhile, in Panama, a moratorium on payments to banks and financial institutions until December 31, 2020, was approved by the federal government. Nevertheless, our exposure to this market is certainly low, and as of this reporting quarter, not even 10% of Panama's portfolio was impacted by this policy. In this context, Instacredit's non-performing loan ratio surged on a sequential basis following write-offs derived from an updated accounting framework related to relief programs for troubled clients, as most aid programs ended this quarter. All in all, even when counting on some recovery signs across the markets where we operate, the unprecedented economic uncertainty demands to uphold a solid risk management approach with a closely watch on the evolution of the situation. Looking ahead, we will continue striving to maintain an adequate capitalization, high quality assets, and strong liquidity to ensure the long-term stability of our business. In this sense, reflecting our swift access to financial markets, we arranged two new credit lines with Barclays and Responsibility for a total of $75 million. These proceeds helped to enhance our financial grounds before the economic volatility. Similarly, we refinanced all maturities of the quarter, and the remaining balance to be refinanced in 2020 mostly belong to revolving facilities, saying that we expect to swiftly conduct with no complications. The volatility surrounding the COVID-19 certainly limit our forecast endeavors. Nevertheless, we are confident that the portfolio will grow this year around 20%, while maintaining a consolidated NPL under 3%. Before concluding, I want to welcome our new appointed directors that recently joined our board, and thank our former directors who ended their tenure after having an instrumental participation in the consolidation of the company. To conclude, I want to recap that Crédito Real is a great company that has been for over a quarter of a century operating successfully and surpassing difficult challenges as were the 1994 and 2008 crises. It has conducted several international debt placements rated by the most respected global agencies in different markets and currencies. Its results are audited by a big four firms, by one of the biggest four firms. Its investor relations function has been recognized by institutional investors for its transparency and accuracy, and it has never defaulted in any single financial liability. As our investors and debt holders trust constitute one of our main pillars at our crusade for the financial inclusion. Please rest assured of our unwavering commitment to fire-tested expertise to run our business. And again, thank you all for joining us today. Now I will pass the call to Carlos Ochoa to get deeper into the numbers of the quarter. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Angel. Good morning, and thank you all for being part of our quarterly earnings conference call. In the third quarter, interest income decreased 14.5% year-over-year from roughly 3 billion pesos to 2.5 billion pesos, reflecting the headwinds caused by the economic effects of COVID-19, in particular, the relief programs for the SMEs. Furthermore, the effects of the consolidation of Crédito Real Arrendamiento also contributed to this decline. However, interest income started to show signs of sequential recovery, increasing by 5.1% in line to the economic reopening in most of the markets where we operate in, and, to a lesser extent, to the normalization of payment schedules of certain troubled clients. Likewise, it is important to keep in mind that the recently formalized alliance with FAMSA will be widely reflecting as of the next quarter, helping us to recover operating volume. On the other hand, total income, which includes the revenue of all our businesses, reached 2.8 billion pesos, a decrease of 12.6% when compared to the same period last year. Interest expense totaled 1.1 billion pesos, down 7.3% when compared to the 1.2 billion pesos in the same period last year, reflecting the positive impact of the environment of lower interest rates despite our larger debt balance. As a result, the financial margin posted an annual decrease of 19.3%, amounting to 1.4 billion pesos. Nevertheless, on a sequential basis, financial margin climbed 16.1%, largely following the progressive normalization of interest income and gradual recovery of most credit segments. Provisions for loan losses increased 38.6% year-over-year and 24.7% quarter-on-quarter, totaling 504 million pesos. The incremental provisions are essentially a result of a prudent decision to build a stronger foundation to face the changes brought by the new normal. Following the higher provisions for loan losses and the effective control of over past due accounts, the coverage ratio increased 38.4 percentage points, standing at 217.3%, an adequate level to face potential loan losses in the short and medium term. Administrative and promotion expenses total 975 million pesos, up 4.8% when compared to the 930 million pesos recorded in the same period last year. This increase is explained by the recognition of depreciation expenses associated with Crédito Real Arrendamiento's operation, which were partially offset by the savings program implemented to face the current environment with a lean but effective structure. Net income totaled 199 million pesos, representing an annual decrease of 54.4%, but showing a significant sequential recovery of 51.4% following the already discussed drivers. In this regard, bottom line performance is expected to improve at the better pace from the fourth quarter 2020 onwards, as relief programs are completed and normalization of economic activities in the markets where we operate move forward. As of September 30, 2020, given a weakened profitability heavily linked to the pandemic, return on average equity declined 810 basis points against the same period last year to reach 4.8%. Excluding the perpetual notes effect, this metric has stood at 6.3%. While return on average assets was at 1.2%, 270 basis points below the 3.9% posted at the end of the third quarter of 2019. The capitalization ratio stood at 33.8% rate as of September 30, 2020, remaining well above industry levels. To further strengthen this metric, we will continue focusing on prudent risk management, poised to take immediate actions on our collections and origination processes as required. The funding cost was 8.4%, reflecting both the recent interest rate reductions undertaken by major central banks and favorable terms obtained at new credit lines subscribed so far this year in Crédito Real and in our subsidiaries, as our credit profile has maintained resilience before the context. In this end, towards year-end 2020, we expect our funding costs will remain in competitive levels. Moving in broader detail to the analysis of the loan portfolio dynamics, total loan portfolio amounted 52.7 billion pesos at the end of the third quarter 2020, growing 20.4% year-over-year and 1.4% quarter-on-quarter, driven by a certain normalization of origination activities in our main markets, outstanding the resilience of Mexico, payroll, and favorable dynamics in the United States. The small and medium-sized enterprise portfolio increased 90.2% versus the same period last year, reaching 11.4 billion pesos, despite the implementation of highly restrictive origination policies that seek to preserve the asset quality following the solid pre-pandemic origination. Payroll totaled 29.4 billion pesos, up 9% and 1.4% over the same period last year and previous quarter, respectively, largely driven by the gradual reopening of economic activities in Mexico and further efforts to adjust operations to the new normal trends. Used car portfolio in Mexico reached 1.3 billion pesos, growing 3% on an annual basis, finding a strong catalyst in the shift of public transportation towards other alternatives, including used affordable vehicles. Integrate's loan portfolio grew 8.7% year-over-year, but decreased 7% when compared to the previous quarter to reach 5.4 billion pesos, reflecting the execution of two lockdowns in Costa Rica as of mid-quarter. The consolidated non-performing loan ratio of this segment was 4.1%, up from the 1.3% recorded last quarter, given the conduction of write-offs at a certain accounts in delinquency after the completion of the some relief programs for troubled clients. In our operations in the United States, the used car portfolio reached 2.7 billion pesos, and the SMEs portfolio totaled 1.6 billion pesos, increasing 38% and 2% respectively, both driven by origination metrics comparable to pre-pandemic levels. Turning to the balance sheet, as of September 30, 2020, total assets increased 28.7% over the same period of 2019, amounting 73.9 billion pesos, following the total loan portfolio growth, as well as debt issuances and credit facilities subscribed over the last 12 months. Outstanding debt totaled 52.4 billion pesos, up 39.9% on an annual basis, largely explained by the mark-to-market valuation effect of a higher exchange rate applied to our dollar-denominated debt, the placement of senior notes due 2027, a third debt issuance made under our securitization program, and facilities subscribed and drawdown of existing credits over the last 12 months. To conclude, as of quarter end, the stockholders' equity totaled 17.8 billion pesos, an annual increase of 7.9% following the already discussed factors. With this, I conclude my remarks, and now let me turn back the call to the operator to open the line for Q&A.
At this time, we will be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. One moment, please, as we poll for questions. Our first question comes from the line of Ernesto Gabilondo with Bank of America. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning, Angel and Carlos. Thanks for the opportunity. I have three questions from my side. The first question is on provision charges. We have seen provisions trending up. So when do you expect to have the peak in provisions? My second question is on deferred loans. As of September, what is the percentage of your deferred clients that were supposed to return to do their payments? And what is the percentage that will do it in the next months? And from what you have seen in September and October, can you share with us what percentage of your deferred clients are current or delayed. And then my last question is on the potential banking bill to regulate interest rates that is being announced by the Mexican banks and the Mexican Banking Association. Given this is the first time that a banking bill is considering to regulate interest rates and that this is coming from Senator Monreal from Morena's party, do you think financial institutions charging high interest rates could be the first ones to be in the spotlight? Can you remind us what is the maximum interest rate that you are charging in payroll loans, and how does it compare to the average interest rates that the banks are charging on payroll loans? Thank you.
Hello, Ernesto. Addressing your first question on the part of the provisions, I mean, what you are seeing in terms of the cost of risk is basically the methodology of expected losses, right? I would say under the current circumstances where you have relief programs, I mean, as of the end of the third quarter, the relief programs amounted for roughly less than 7%. If you think about the relief programs, basically what happens is that those customers under a form of relief program, they are treated as current, right? However, if you think in terms of provisioning, they are not treated as current, and that's why you see that increase, and that's why you see that increase in the provisions. So we feel comfortable. I mean, having a cost of risk, a consolidated cost of risk, just around the 4% level is something that we've been experiencing in the past, and I think it's very present. Also, something very important to bear in mind is that the provisions that we built up during this quarter amounted roughly above 600 million pesos, but it's important to mention that you net those out of the collections and past due charges and so on, that during the quarter amounted for roughly 130, 137 million pesos. So that's why at the end of the day, you have a solid 500 million pesos that leads to a 4.2% cost of risk. I believe that this is, I mean, the especially when you see the trends that we are experiencing in the last business, in particular in the SMEs, which are the last with the relief programs, we expect them, we expect these customers to normalize their payments on the following two quarters maximum. So I would say that if everything remains as stable as we are seeing, the cost of risk, the consolidated cost of risk should be something within this range, 4.2%, 4.5%, and we feel comfortable with that figure because it's something that we've lived in the past. Addressing the relief programs, I already touched that part on the previous answer. Just they are on a form of relief program, 6.3%, and the bulk of the relief programs that we have granted are clearly on the SMEs front, and we would expect them to normalize over the next couple of quarters. Again, how much of them are paying and how much of them are not paying, you can see that under the NPLs line. Clearly, if the customers are fulfilling the commitments, under the relief program, they are treated as current, and if they are not, they are treated as an NPL. So in Mexico, the NPL ratio still stands at the 0.6% under 1% under the 1% range. So we feel comfortable that well, and we are optimistic. I mean, something that we've been very emphatic since the beginning of the crisis is that we've been in very close contact with the customers, trying to understand the current situation and to find a suitable solution for each one. And I think that this is paying off at this point, and we will continue to do that. We will continue to do so in the next following months. And addressing the final part of your question, the interest rate caps, I don't know. I mean, probably this was You know, if you look at the, if you look at the headlines in the last couple of weeks, I mean, for starters, we listened to the Minister of Finance complaining about the banks not being aggressive enough in terms of credit, granting. And probably the way to look at this one is that this is something related to that, you know, to put some pressure on the banks in particular, to grant more credits, and let's see how it works. Finally, I mean, if you think about the maximum interest rate that we charge in the payroll business, it should be something an APR around the 50, 52%, 53%, something within that range. And I think that that compares very favorable. I don't know about the payroll products I don't know about the payroll products for the banks, because as you know, that's not the top line for them. That's not the top product for them. But it compares very favorable against other products such as the credit cards and so on. So I think we will be okay. And again, given the lack of visibility, not only in terms of the performance, but in terms of how the federal government is going to implement a number of, you know, of initiatives, I mean, the most prudent thing to do at this point is, you know, to remain cautious.
Thank you very much, Carlos. Just a question regarding on when do you expect the bulk of the SMEs clients were doing the first payment, and when they will be doing the rest of their payments? Just to have in perspective, for example, September, you already have certain percentage of clients resuming payments, and maybe the next one will concentrate by year end. So just to understand, when can we see the NPL showing up? I think that will show up maybe in the first half of next year.
No, I would say that what you are going to see before that is going to see an increase in the interest rate, you know, on the yield line. I mean, I would see that the normal, what we expect is quite the other way around. I mean, one of the things that we understand about the decline in the interest and on the consolidated income line or whatever is due to the, you know, the number of SMEs customers that are not fully paying at this point. So what I'm trying to say is that we are seeing, rather than thinking in terms of asset deterioration, which you can see some part of it, you can see it under the provision line and on the cost of risk altogether, what we would expect for the next couple of quarters is going to be a normalization on the income line. That's basically where we're standing.
Yes, I agree and I understand, but in terms of the NPL cycle, just for example, if supposedly they have to return in September to do the first payment and they did not, then you have, I think, about between 30 to 90 days and they become past due loan. So I just want to understand, is the bulk of the SMEs paying for the first time was in September, October, or it was concentrated at the end of the year?
So probably the effect that you will see is going to be a decline in the coverage ratio. If you look at the decline, if you look at the coverage ratio, how's been trending the coverage ratio over the past two, three quarters, I mean, for starters, it's been a number of years since we don't have a coverage ratio, you know, provisions over NPLs that stands above the 200% boundary. So the decline that you are seeing from the 240 that we saw in the second quarter, as of the end of the second quarter, that decline to the 217% range that you are seeing now is because of that increase on the NPLs or because of a charge-off in between. So basically, I would expect instead of seeing a dramatic increase on the NPL line, what I would expect is a gradually decline on the coverage ratio due to an increase in the NPLs or to charge-offs. I don't know if this makes sense to you.
Yes, it makes sense to have a higher NPLs next year and reducing the coverage ratio, but not really increasing too much the provision charges in the P&L.
That's correct. That's correct. I mean, I believe that as long as we remain with a coverage ratio of the 200% range, I mean, we are confident that the effects that might cause an increase on the NPL ratio is not going to be, you know, is not going to have a major impact on the P&L.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much, Carlos.
Thank you, Ernesto.
Our next question comes from the line of Nicolas Riva with Bank of America. Please see with your question.
Thanks, Carlos and Angel, for taking my questions. I have two questions. The first one on InstaCredit. So there was a big increase in the NPL ratio this quarter, and I remember that it's kind of reversing the decline that happened last quarter. I believe that you had said last quarter that the decline last quarter also had to do with write-offs in that business. If you can explain to us what drove the increase in the NPL ratio in that business this quarter. I think you mentioned probably some problems, some challenges in Panama to collect on some of the loans. And really, what's your outlook really for the instant credit business in the next few months? And then the second question, it's a follow-up on the question that Ernesto asked about the restructured loans. And I believe that you said that to see, you know, which of the SME clients that receive these loans, the restructured loans are paying, we should also look at the NPL ratio. If I look at the NPL ratio as of September, the 1.8%, let's say for an SME client where you cut in half the amount that they are paying every quarter, but they have not resumed payments yet. They are not paying you on that restructured loan so far. As of September, that SME client, was that considered performing or not? Thank you.
Okay. Look, I mean, for starters, I mean, what I would say when it comes to InstaCredit is that the figure that you saw in the previous quarter, the figure that was considerably lower to the InstaCredit standards, was due to a freeze on the assets, right? I mean, that was required by the auditors to freeze the assets, and basically that's what, you know, the combination of that asset freeze and some charge-off during the period led to a very low NPL ratio for InstaCredit standards, right? Now, that freeze, you know, the freeze lasted for 3 months, and now what you are seeing, that increase in the NPL ratio, what you are seeing is basically the effect of a normalization in the way you compute the NPLs. What I'm trying to say altogether is that what you are seeing is that this figure, the NPL, should be trending upwards to their historical levels, which are around the 5% or probably even higher. If you remember a couple of years ago when we had the situation in Nicaragua, the NPL ratio for InstaCredit stood above the 7% range or something like that. So basically, you know, the this is more like during the second quarter was an unusual figure due to the breeze, but now, right now, what you are seeing is that it's trending to their normal levels, right? Very important to mention, and that's something that we consider a lot when it comes to the InstaCredit portfolio, is to have the right amount of provisions. So if you ask me about the provision levels that we keep on InstaCredit, they have remained all together. They've stood, you know, consistent over the quarter, over the two or three quarters of this year, consistent to pre-COVID levels. And not only that, the management over there in Central America, they made a decision, you know, a very conservative decision, that building up more provision, you know, in order to address whatever contingency we might face in the different countries we operate in. So basically what I'm trying to say is that the unusual figure is not the 4.1% that you are seeing as of this quarter, but it was in the previous quarter and should be trending to a 6% range if things go as we expect them to go, right?
Okay, Carlos, one follow-up there. When you talk about the asset freeze in InstaCredit in the second quarter, you're talking about that you couldn't collect on some of the loans because of government regulations to defer not to collect any payments on loans in the second quarter?
No, that only happened in Panama. That only happened in Panama, and actually that's a measure that's been extended until the end of the year for the portfolio in Panama. What I mean by freezing the asset is that basically, accounting-wise, all the customers that were current, they remain current, and that's how you see that major improvement. And now that that freeze period has ended, basically what you are seeing is the portfolio rolling over naturally.
Okay, but the point is that I think you just said that you see room for that NPL ratio in InstaCredit to go up to 6%. I'm not sure in which time frame, but the point is that you think that there could be increases there. So part of the reason why you probably expect the NPL ratio overall to increase up to 3% by the end of this year could be InstaCredit.
A portion of it, yes. But to tell you the truth, we are being very present when it comes to the InstaCredit, especially because we know how that portfolio performs. I mean, that you can have NPLs as high as 7% or something like that. So basically, that's the reason, that's the reason where we, build up an increase in provisions and so on. So basically, we're taking a more prudent approach on that one.
Okay, thanks very much, Carlos. And then as for my second question, in that example of an SME client in which you restructured the loan, if you can clarify to us how you were classifying those clients as of September and also in this fourth quarter, assuming that they are not paying yet?
That's right. Look, let me answer. I'm going to answer that question, on two fronts. For starters, except on very specific situations, such as restaurants that were, closed down altogether, we did not granted grace periods, and that's very important to mention. We did not reschedule, we did not granted grace periods, but and basically all the relief programs for the SMEs involved a form of payment. That's very important. So how, accounting-wise, how do you treat those? If the customer is fulfilling its commitment to the new structure or whatever, to the new facilities, under the relief program, that's going to be kept under current, as current, right? But it's very important, again, address this question under the, under the provision side. Under the methodology, the expected provisions methodology, what you have is that you have two elements, one which is called the likelihood of default, and the other one which is the severity of the loss. And these two elements, you multiply them, times the outstanding balance of the customer. Whenever you change the structure of the original facility, that affects the likelihood of default. So instead of having a 45% likelihood of default, if you restructure a credit, you increase that likelihood of default to 100%. So basically what I'm trying to say is that it doesn't really matter that much. Well, it does matter clearly. It does matter, the NPL ratio. But what is more important about this, the whole thing, is that you are provisioning the right amount for all those credits, that were restructured or that are under a form of relief program. So that's why you see the increase. That's why, that's the explanation where you see a stable NPL ratio consistent with our historical levels, but you see an increase in the cost of risk and furthermore an increase in the coverage ratio. So basically that's where we are standing. And as I was explaining to Ernesto earlier, the thing that we would expect in the following months is, for starters, NPL ratio increases, but the coverage ratio decreases due to this, due to the effect of the expected losses methodology for provisioning. I don't know if this answers your question, Nicolas.
It does, Carlos, and I guess what you're trying to say is that we should be looking more at what's going on with your provisions for loan losses, because there you use expected losses rather than what's happening with the NPL ratio. It seems that in the provisions for loan losses, it's a bit more forward-looking right now than looking at your NPL ratio. Now, my only maybe comment there, and I want to let other people ask questions, but my only comment would be that if I just look at provisions for loan losses, 500 million pesos this quarter, in the second quarter, 400 million, 460 in the first quarter. But if I go a bit further back, it looks like before and after the pandemic, in your case, except for the fourth quarter, but there hasn't been like a big discrepancy or increase in loan loss provisions. And I know that your coverage of NPLs has always been historically high, so probably you didn't need to build even a higher coverage of NPLs. But it looks like in your case, differently from other companies in financials in Mexico, we haven't seen such a big jump in provisions after the pandemic. If that's clear.
I would have to disagree with that one, especially if you look at the cost of risk, it went up from 100 basis, you know, compared to the previous quarter. I mean, when normally it was under, you know, the 3% range, I mean, we're 100 basis above that one, and that's a lot of money, and that's basically what explains the underperform that Ernesto put us on our stock. So I disagree with that one.
Okay.
No, I mean, what we intend to convey at this point is that we are being very prudent when it comes to the risk management of the company. We feel comfortable with the provisions that we've been building. I mean, and you know, building provisions above the 500 million pesos net of recoveries from charge-offs, I mean, I'd say it's very prudent.
It's a big increase from the same quarter last year.
Right. Okay. Thanks very much, Carlos and Angel. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicolas.
Thank you.
Our next question comes to the line of Nick Dimitriev with Morgan Stanley. Please see with your question.
Hi there. Many of my questions have been answered, but I have two questions. So the first one is, I was looking at your net interest margin, and if I kind of go back a year ago, right, your net interest margin was north of 17%, at one point even exceeded 18%, and it collapsed all the way down to 10% in Q2 2020. There's been a bit of a recovery in Q3. So I was wondering, in terms of outlook, considering the fact that we are in a low interest rate environment, probably for longer, is it realistic to expect that NIM eventually will recover to the 17% area? And if not, where do you see NIM going in the coming quarters?
Okay. Look, there are two big differences between last year's and this year. And probably the one that has affected the most the NIM in that regard is the consolidation of Crédito Real Arrendamiento. So just to remind whoever is on the line, just to remind is that in the past, basically we provided the funds we have exclusivity on the funding for the Crédito Real Arrendamiento, and we provided it as a facility. So basically we had 6.5 billion pesos, you know, a massive loan of 6.5 billion that, I mean, and we used to charge something around the 15-17% interest rate. When we consolidated the Arrendadora, basically the effect that had was to split those 6.5 billion pesos according to the nature of the income of the different businesses, right? Meaning factoring, and you can see the income that generates the factoring business now appears as fees collected. And then you have the rents, you know, on the leasing business, and you see those under the other income from operations mostly. So basically that led to an effect. That led to an effect on the decrease on the yield altogether and forward looking on the NIM. If you look at the financial margin as of this quarter, for starters, This consolidation that I'm explaining you led to a 2%, I would say, a 2% decrease. Basically, that's the explanation for a 2%. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, what we have is that the mix, if you look at that in the previous year, the SMEs business amounted roughly 12-14%, if I'm correct, 12-something percent, and as of the end of third quarter, amounts roughly 20-22% or something even above that one. The mix, that effect of the mix of product that had on the NIM amounts, according to our calculations, and you can see that on the press release, amounts for roughly 1.5%, 1.3%. And then you have all the different situations. So forward-looking, what I would expect is that the NIM should normalize as a result of, one, the relief programs coming to an end, and that's bound to happen over the next couple of quarters. So once that we normalize, you know, the relief programs specifically for the SMEs business, I mean, that should be trending upwards altogether and helping us in terms of the NIM. Another important thing, and something that we, you know, that we've been struggling with over the last two or three quarters, has been on the payroll origination. You know, the payroll origination, you know, we hit the bottom on the second quarter with an origination something roughly 900 million pesos or something during the quarter. That was extremely low if you compare to, for starters, what we have, what we experienced over this quarter, that was roughly 1.5 billion or above 1.4 billion or something within that range. So that helps us a lot. That helps us a lot in terms of the yield. And that helps us a lot altogether in terms of the, you know, given the NIM that the payroll product carries. So that's going to be beneficial over the next couple of quarters, and definitely it's going to be trending upwards. You know, so there are a number of factors that affected the NIM in the last two or three quarters, but I would expect a normalization of them in the next couple of quarters, trending upwards clearly.
Okay, but you don't have any level in mind?
No, I mean, what we see is that, I mean, what we are expecting is that probably, you know, there's going to be a downsize in the SMEs portfolio, given that we are not generating new customers, that the approval rates are so low. So probably that's going to release some pressure over the NIM, you know, due to a change in the product mix. But clearly, that's a figure that we look very closely, and we would expect it to be, I don't know, probably if it's not going to be in the 17% range, at least something around roughly 14-15% as things normalize and as we settle, you know, within the right size of the SME's portfolio.
Okay, got it. And one quick question. I've seen some lenders come up with a second relief program for borrowers that were in a first relief program, but they're still struggling to repay their borrowings. I just want to make sure that that's not going to be an option for Credit Real, right? All the guys that are at the end of their... Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, we're not thinking on any second relief programs at the time. And the relief programs that we had were very limited and are having a good result. So we don't believe we will need a second relief program of any kind.
Yeah, and furthermore on that side is that, and that we've been very emphatic about this since the beginning of the crisis, is that we do not campaign solutions. So basically, if some particular customer have a particular situation, I mean, you cannot abstract yourself from the reality of the customer. So we need to find a suitable solution. But we're not going to do as the banks did, or we do not intend to create a problem that we do not have yet. That's basically the rationale.
Exactly.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
Our next question comes to the line of Natalia Corfield with JP Morgan. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you very much for taking my question. I have two questions, and the first one is related to your collections. I've seen a decline from the second quarter to the third quarter in terms of collection. You had around like 9 billion in the second quarter. Now you have around 8 billion. So my first question is related to that, like what's really driving this decline, and particularly because origination has been increasing. So I wanted to reconcile the decline in collections and increasing in origination.
Yes. For starters, the increase in the origination happened during September. So you do not get to see the full effect. I mean, it started, you know, mid-August or something like that, but basically the recovery in the origination started as of the end of the quarter. So you are not going to see the effect of that one on the collections front. So that's for starters. But if you look at what happened, you know, probably if you look at the payroll business, which is the collection for the payroll business, has remained extremely stable. What happened during the previous quarter is that we collected past due amounts or something unusual collection. That was as of the third Q. But it has remained very stable, you know, the 2.1 billion was on the second quarter, and it's consistent to what we've collected in this quarter. So the decline that you see that went down from the 8.6 billion to the 7.8 billion that we are looking comes mostly from the SMEs front. The increase that you see in the second quarter, if I'm correct, that was also associated to factoring, which were, you know, short-term products that we originated, you know, less than, you know, something in the range of 45 days or 60 days or something, and you get to see the origination as well as the collection during the same period. Since we've been more cautious in terms of originating new credits or new facilities altogether, specifically in the SMEs, that leads to a decline. So it's a combination of both. So in a nutshell, what I would say is that as long as the collections remain in the 8 billion range, we feel comfortable.
Natalia, if you see the page on collection on the report, you can clearly see that SMEs declined from 3.2 billion to 1.7 billion in the quarter, and that's exactly what Carlos was explaining. It's due to the factoring business, which we've been extremely cautious, but it's very short-term loans, and second quarter included pre-COVID business where we were growing a lot on that business, and you see the collection on the same period that you originate the loan.
Okay, so clear. So if we see that around the eight billion, this is the number you feel comfortable about. And is this the expectation that we should have for the next quarters, something around 8 billion?
Yes, I think that's correct.
Yeah, as a rule of thumb, I mean, that's where we can sleep at night.
All right. And just another follow-up on asset quality and relief programs. You had more or less 8.6% of your portfolio under relief programs in the second quarter. Now you have 6.3%. Just to have a little bit more of color, like on the loans that are out of the relief programs, like what's the percentage that are really current at this point?
It would be what is not. Basically, that's what you see under the NPLs. That's what you see under the NPLs. And if you want to address this, I mean, probably the right way to see it is that if you look at the provisions that we've built in particular for the SMEs, and that's also included in the press release, I mean, you can see that the coverage ratio for the SMEs in particular is very conservative. So it would be the same case.
But would it already be an NPL? Because the NPL, I understand you would wait 90 days. So that's why I'm asking the opposite. Like how much of the loans that were out of the relief programs are actually paying?
Yeah, I would have to look into those figures, because it's going to be a difference between the NPL and there's also the charge-offs, right? I don't know if you follow me. So what I'm trying to say is that whoever doesn't fulfill the new commitment under the relief program is going to be treated as an NPL, and to some extent, eventually that will lead to a charge-off, right? So as long as you have, that's why it's very important to not only look at the NPL ratio, but also to look at the provisions on the provision side. I don't know if this makes sense to you.
Okay, it's because I think I get it. It's because even under your relief programs, customers were still required to make some sort of payment. I think
yes.
That's what. Okay.
Yes, on the one hand, yes, but at the end of the day, even if it doesn't matter if he makes under the relief program, if he makes payments or he doesn't, you are going to provision it.
Right. No, I am just trying to understand because, like, to become an NPL would be overdue by more than 90 days. So that's what I'm thinking,
correct.
Clients that are not paying, they're still not in your 90 days NPL ratio.
That's right. And it's also important to bear in mind that it's not only that they make payments, but they have to make the full installment, not only a payment, right?
Okay. Right. So, I don't know, if you could provide, doesn't need to be now, but like the percentage the percentage that has been paying currently, that would be great, because then it would solve the problem of who hasn't been paid, because probably it's not still in your NPL ratio, I believe.
Yeah, we'll look into it and try to be more clear about that one.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Natalia.
As a final reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. As a final reminder, please press *1 on your telephone keypad if you would like to ask a question. Our next question comes to the line of Matthew Breckenridge with DSC Meridian. Please see what your question.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my questions. I have a question about the change of the board members. What is the normal period for when, time frame for when board members change? It's usually after a shareholder vote. What was different about this period?
Sorry, a change in what? I didn't get that part.
And so the members of the board of directors. You had four. You had a third of your members of the board of directors resign.
Yes, mainly the changes in the board of directors was people that weren't coming to the board anymore. We had a lot of associates from our businesses where we had a majority stake and that are no longer strategic for Crédito Real, like Resuelve Tu Deuda and the car business, the CRFACT business. So we asked those people to step down of the board, and we brought people that we believe know more about the company and have been more involved in the company, and we're still trying to make the board more institutional, bringing more outsiders, and that you will see in the first quarter of the coming year.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, usually it's after the AGM, no? And then it would be in the new year. Is that the usual period?
Not for us. I mean, if you look at the changes in the past that we've made in the past, they do not obey a particular month in the calendar. But in any case, what is important as well is that those changes need to be ratified at the shareholders' meeting. So in any case,
okay.
I mean, and the shareholders' meeting is going to be held in next January.
February.
Yep.
Okay. Going to the cash flow statement, there was a inflow of cash from the derivative book. Did you take off hedges for interest rate or for currencies?
No, wait, basically what we did, and it was with a 50 million tranche on the euro, on the euro hedge, we recouponed to from the 19 to the 20%. It was basically 1 peso. I mean, we recouponed 1 peso above. So basically, that's what we did. In any case, I mean, we felt it was prudent at the time, and following a very conservative approach on the hedging and the strategy of, and the hedging strategy of the company.
Sorry, I don't understand. So you rolled your hedging down so that
recouponed. We changed the strike price from the – we increased the strike price from 1 peso over a notional of 50 million pesos.
And you were able to release – so that's $60 million roughly. You were able to release that much money?
That's right.
Okay. Next question is, what is in the short-term and long-term investments? What makes up the short-term investments? Are they government bonds?
Short-term, short-term investments, they are, that's basically how we manage cash. That's basically, we consider cash under the two lines, you know, cash and the cash equivalents and investments in securities. Whereas the long-term investment in shares, that's the participation in the subsidiaries where we hold equity stakes.
Okay. All right, and then my last question is, what percentage of let's go back to the NPLs and people who are under, I guess, you know, relief programs. If I'm a customer and I'm making 50%, I'm hypothetically, of my original contracted payment, what are you doing with the other, in my example, 50%? Are you capitalizing that, or is it just forgiven for the period?
No. I mean, every customer has a specific solution. Every customer gets a specific solution. And at some point, they have to end up paying the original amount. But I mean, what we can do and what we've been doing is, I don't know, especially, you know, as you can imagine, for example, in the case of the restaurants, I mean, we could not be very strict with them during the lockdown. So probably in those cases, yes, we extended, we granted grace periods. Or basically, I mean, what I'm trying to say is that at some point, this is going to end up, you know, probably by extending the duration of those facilities, or, you know, at some point, you know, the solution, there can be a number of solutions, you know, extraordinary payments on their side, ones that things normalize. I don't know, it's a very broad question,
I understand, but my question is specifically, if the customer had an original contracted rate, and a relief program to me means that they either are getting relief on the amount of interest and their principal payment dates. So it's one or both of those. And my question is, if a customer is getting relief on interest payments, are you capitalizing the difference between the original contract rate and the amount they're actually paying cash, or are you, and you're, what you're telling me is you're not forgiving it, so are you capitalizing it? And then the second question is that different, the difference between the contract rate and the amount they're paying, actually paying under the relief program, is that going through interest income, or is it showing up someplace else?
Look, I mean, it's not a straightforward question, that one, because the solutions can be, you know, as I was telling you, a number of solutions. In any case, the original amount is going to have to be paid, and basically that is going to be paid in full. And basically, you know, probably a good way to summarize it is going to be, you know, you are extending the duration of those facilities. If I had to be, you know, succinct in terms of an answer, I would say, we are going to, in most of the cases, we are going to extend the duration of the facilities.
Okay. Thanks. I'm finished.
Thank you.
Our next question comes to the line of Rodrigo Sanhueza with Pine Bridge Investments. Please see your question.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. My question is regarding growth. I know that you are with a very comfortable capital position, and you already stated also that you are going to be very conservative on your SME portfolio. But I was wondering if you could provide us more color on what's going on your payroll portfolio growth and also in the other segments that you are in business. Could you provide us with a breakdown on or your expectations on how growth is going to look going forward?
I'll answer you on the payroll program. Payroll was very complicated at the beginning of the COVID because, as you know, we do this on-site, person-to-person, so there were no government employees at the offices, and our salespeople weren't able to be on the streets either selling the loans, so it was very slow. We were originating like half of what we were on a daily basis last year. And by the end of September, it's become more regular. And the FAMSA deal is helping us a lot. We are starting to originate with them around, I'll tell you numbers. Last year, we originated about 25 million pesos per day on the payroll business. At the beginning and middle of the pandemic, we were originating about 12 to 13 million pesos a day, and today we are back to 20, 22 million pesos a day, and this is because of two reasons. One is FAMSA, that we didn't have a big presence in the north of the country, and we are starting the deal with FAMSA. I would say we're at 40% of the potential of that deal, and then a lot of people are coming back to the offices on the government agencies, and we have our people there starting to sell loans. So we believe that the fourth quarter will be good in origination and should be close to what we originated in the last quarter last year.
Yeah, and if you look at the other, the different lines of business, given the visibility that we have at the time, we feel optimistic on the used car businesses on both sides of the border. You know, the used car business in the States have been performing extremely well, and we see a spike in the demand, and that's something similar that we are experiencing over here in Mexico. If you look at the official figures, you know, the demand for used cars has increased roughly 20%, whereas there's been a decline in the demand for new cars. So I think that we are profiting from that, and I would say that you know, the trends that you are looking in those two businesses, given the visibility that we have at the time, I mean, that's going to help us. There are other aspects, you know, more challenging. For example, what's going to happen in terms of Central America? In Central America, you know, we have, you know, a challenging situation in Panama as well. But I don't know. I mean, what we can say is all together is probably in terms of having the best use of our equity, probably it's going to be in our best interest to, you know, to downsize a little bit, as I mentioned, to downsize a little bit the SME's portfolio here in Mexico and to focus on the most profitable or with the highest NIMs, the products with the highest NIMs. All in, I would say that the 20% that we are seeing right now, I think it's something doable with the combinations of what Angel mentioned and the other two or three lines of business. So that's where we are standing, given the visibility that we have at the time.
Okay, thank you. That's clear. And maybe just a quick follow-up on the payroll again. Since you are doing this deal with FAMSA and you're known, correct me if I'm mistaken, but that your collections are direct transfers from the government. Is there any changes on your collections procedures? Are you targeting other customers differently from what you've been doing these past years? I noticed also that your ticket slightly decreased, so I was wondering how should we understand that, and also how should we understand this going forward, given the economic backdrop?
No, we do not intend to change that. And probably the good thing, if you look at the payroll portfolio as of the end of the third Q, if you look at the one of the good things about our portfolio is that right now, as of the end of the third Q, we have a concentration of around 90% of the book, 90%, 90, with federal or pensioners. So basically, that helps us a lot in terms of asset quality. I mean, and that's definitely a one of the strengths that we have. The collections for those segments have been extremely reliable over the past 2 years or so. So we do not intend to change that one.
Perfect. And I have a second question on liability management. I don't know if you are planning something regarding your perpetual bonds or any other international issues.
No, those are that's still a couple of years ago. I mean, and given the present circumstances, you cannot do much about them. But definitely, once that the markets are open, I mean, we will look into it. We will look into it. And as you may know, I mean, the company, I mean, one of the we've been very prudent when it comes to, you know, the liability management, when it comes to addressing our financial needs, and definitely, but it's not the time right now to focus on that one. What we are very, you know, we are very pleased at this point is to see all the support that we are getting, not only from local or international banks, but also from development agencies and things like that. And that's definitely going to, you know, altogether, our flexible, you know, the different instruments and the different latitudes where we can operate when it comes to the liabilities, I think that puts us in a very good position.
Okay. Thank you, Carlos and Angel.
Thank you.
Take care, Rodrigo.
Our final question comes from the line of Nick Demetria with Morgan Stanley. Please see with your question.
Hi there. Sorry, this is just a follow-up. The NPL definition that you use for the factoring business is what? Is it 90-plus days, or it's something else considering how short that business is?
No, it's 90 days.
90 days.
Yes, yeah, basically we have the NPL definition is the same all across our products. 90 days, and we charge off at 180 days.
Well, how is that working out in practice if the invoice that you're purchasing is like 2 months, right, 60 days,
yeah,
and it goes in default, so it doesn't get captured by the NPL definition?
At some point it will, and the thing, yeah, I mean, you have a point over there, but at some point it will, right? And basically, and the bad side of it, if you look at this way, is that given that you are provisioned under, you know, expected losses, you provision a certain amount at the beginning, but once that it becomes NPL, well, definitely that should increase the provisions, but that's normally how it works.
So you basically kind of, I understand what you're talking about, but in terms of when it's going to flow into NPLs, is you kind of delay the recognition until it hits the 90 days, and then you recognize it, despite the fact that it went delinquent way before that, right?
Yeah, I mean, You could have a point on that one, but normally, you know, the duration for those facilities are under the 90 days. Yeah, but there are more than 45 days. I mean, if you think that we generate value, you know, with the 60 days range or something on the average, they are more like 60 days. So, yeah, you have a point. Definitely you have a point, but that's how it works.
Okay. All right. Thank you, guys.
Take care, Nick.
With no more questions in the queue, this concludes our question and answer session. Thank you for joining us on the call today. You may now disconnect your lines and have a wonderful day.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.